Welcome to Grow Cook Eat Arrange, and we are going to do our podcast Q&A. So we are talking about February questions now, so the things that we've been sent in relevant to the month of February. And the first one is, when can you move seedlings outside if you use a windowsill propagator? So I guess what we're talking about here is hardening off. And Josie and I don't necessarily totally agree about this. I think I tend to be a bit more brutal than Josie. But of course, it depends what you're growing. So if you're growing something that's hardy, either a hardy annual, like, for instance, calendulas or ami, or a hardy perennial that you might grow from seed, then they're hardy. And so really, as soon as you get, I don't know, I always tend to think here in Sussex, mid-April, I can start putting them out. And it's true, I could put them out for 3 hours on one day, 4 hours the next, 5 hours the next, but I'm not that organised.
And we haven't got the time.
And exactly. So I would tend to say, with a hardy annual, as long as you wait until the middle of April, then, you know, just whack them out. I mean, it's true. If they've been grown in a really hot inside place rather than a cold greenhouse or a cold frame or a polytunnel, you will need to do a little bit more, just so that it isn't like they've gone from the Bahamas to the Arctic. You know, it's just thinking of it like that, I guess. And then, of course, if it's half hardy annuals, you've got to be a little bit more careful because they won't take, you know, even a minus one. And so with them, you've just got to keep a beady eye on the forecast. I always try and push it a little earlier than I should. And I've had a few disasters because of that. So sort of by the end of April, I'm really thinking of moving them out for the whole day, bringing them in at night, and then about a week later, hoping to get them into the garden. But again, if a frost is forecast, then I'll have to rush out with fleece and cover them just for the colder nights. So would you agree with that, Josie?
Yes, yeah. I've seen the question. It's a windowsill propagator, so I would probably advise taking the whole thing, the whole propagator, outside rather than taking them out of the propagator and exposing them to cold. You know, it's an environment they're used to. So take the whole thing outside, take the lid off when it's sunny outside, put it back on at night if it's going to be cooler, and that, you know, that's hardening off. You know, we do our hardening off here by taking them from the polytunnel and putting them in the cold frame. You know, that's our hardening. There's no back in the polytunnel or anything like that. But we're lucky to have cold frames, so that makes it much easier.
Yeah, okay. So the next question is from Marion Cormack. And she wants to ask about sweet peas. We had a question actually in our January Q&A on sweet peas, but here we've got another one in February. Absolutely right. It's completely the right time of year to be thinking about sweet peas. And Marion says, my sweet peas have come up quite gangly. What should I do now? Okay, I love this question because I have this saying that runs around my head. And when I'm teaching, I try and get everyone to kind of sing it, which is, if in doubt, pinch out. So sweet peas, more than anything, when you get to the 3 true leaf stage, so they're normally maybe, I would say, 5 to 6 centimetres, you will have 3 pairs of leaves, you pinch out the growing tip. And what that does is it removes apical dominance, it then pushes a lot of energy and the growth hormone into root development. If it's in a root trainer, it'll then branch, you'll get more root development in a virtuous circle. And it also then, the growth hormone pushes up the plant and pushes out at the axillary bud between the main stem and the leaf. And so where you have a tall, gangly, leggy thing, which is called etiolated, you then get something really nice, almost like a box ball if you pinch it. It becomes really leafy and contained and strong, and that makes a bigger, more productive, more floriferous and healthier plant. So if in doubt, pinch out is what I would always say with sweet peas in February.
And there's very few annuals that you shouldn't pinch out, really, isn't there? It benefits everything.
Yeah, in the cut flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, if in doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, if in doubt, pinch out. Yeah. Absolutely. So the next question I'm going to hand to Josie, because she is our P&D queen. She's our pest and diseases queen. And it's true that we've had a little bit more of an issue with this in the garden this year. Than last year, and last year than the year before. So it does seem to be on the up, and it's about dahlia gall. So one question for Sarah about the dreaded dahlia gall. Can she give some general advice about it? It seems to be cropping up more frequently. People are saying that it's mass-produced tubers from Holland that are infected with it rather than UK-grown tubers. Now, over to Josie. I don't think that is true about the Dutch versus UK, but over to Josie.
No, you're right. The Dutch are very much all over this and are doing all they can to contain it. So there's leafy gall, which will give you foliage but no flowers, so that's obvious to spot. They're bacterial infections. That's Rhodococcus, and that's not something new. You know, these things were identified early in the last century, so they've been around for decades. It's just with the increasing demand for dahlias that we're seeing more of it.
Okay, because dahlias are more common. Basically, dahlias are more common, so the diseases that come with them are, yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. Everybody's demanding more and more. So, you know, the Dutch are having to lift earlier to supply the demand. And because of changing temperatures, the dahlia skins on the tubers haven't necessarily cured sufficiently, which means they're easier to damage. So when they lift their dahlias and then they wash them, they jet wash all the soil off them. And obviously, if the tuber skin hasn't cured, then you're going to damage that. And that's when you can get the bacteria getting into the tuber. So, yeah, so there's leafy gall and crown gall, which is an agrobacterium. So you get flowers with weak stems. These, you'll see the crown gall more often. You know, it's easier to spot, really. You'll get that proliferation of little stems on top of the tuber. You see this when you're lifting them. We obviously don't lift all of our dahlias, but because if we're moving gardens around, or, you know, for whatever reason, or they're coming out of pots, you know, we look for that crown gall. And I've had to discard, say, 5% of what we lifted this autumn. So it's not a huge number.
Okay. And how do you recognise it, Josie? It looks like a sort of growth, doesn't it? Sort of, it almost looks like a growth towards the soil surface side of the tuber.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Right at the top where the eyes are, top of the tuber, you'll see this proliferation. And they're usually whitish as they come out. The thing is to keep your plants, it's hygiene is how we get round it. So you have to be really, really careful with not damaging the tubers. And when you set your tubers into growth in March, you put them in the pot and leave them, this is in a pot, I'm saying bring them into growth, leave the tuber just proud of the soil level. And then you can see if there's any proliferation of a mass of stems, you know there's gall, so discard it. So, you know, if you have that all under the soil, you can't see what's going on. So it's a good idea just to have that little bit nearer the surface.
And could you take cuttings from an infected one or not?
No, because it'll just pass on, yeah. So I wouldn't, I'd avoid that. So if you know that your dahlia's got this in the garden, you can tell because they send up this mass of weak stems and you get very few flowers. So I would not cut from it at all. But of course there'll be other dahlias which seem to be slightly resistant to it. But of course they'll be carrying the bacteria. So you're passing it on with your secateurs as you cut deadhead from one to the next. So you must sterilise your cutting equipment. You know, to carry a spray with you. Now all the gardeners here carry little bottles of spray, anything, you know, an antibacterial or, a weak bleach, anything to clean your secateurs with. Just spray it, obviously, carefully around your plants if you're spraying.
So as you're going between cuttings
plant
and flowers
plant.
From one,
yeah.
You must... Could you have a bucket with a weak solution in that you just
absolutely. Yes, if that's easier. Yeah. I mean, it's a massive pain for florists picking because you just go from one plant to the next. And I completely understand that. But it's something we've all got to get our heads around now, is just to sterilise cutting equipment. And it's keeping the dahlias in really healthy. As soon as they're under stress, then they'll succumb to these things.
Okay, and it's become more widespread already in America, hasn't it? We have quite a few Americans come to my courses here and they say that they've had to move to literally having on their belts sort of some solution that they just, as they move between plants, they sterilize every time.
Yes, yeah. They're much more aware of it in America. And we will, you know, we will lose some, but unless we're producing all our dahlias by tissue culture, then, you know, virus and things will get passed from one to the next, bacteria and virus. So tissue culture for all our dahlias would be quite a thing.
Gosh, so not very cheerful, I'm afraid, but there we are.
No, but it's always been with us. Let's look at it like that. And we've still got wonderful dahlias.